Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Wednesday morning, 12 minutes after 9 o'clock. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Every morning right around this time, we convene the Roundtable panel. It's an exciting moment in radio history where we discuss events in the news and beyond. And today's panel, wow, what a panel. WAMC's Alan Shartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Well, good morning to you, Raymond. Are you fit and fiddle?
Associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain, is here. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Ray.
And corporate attorney, leftist sympathizer, Rich Honan is here. Good morning.
Power to the people.
That's right. Keep on keeping on, my friend.
Hey, Rich, you get billable hours for your helping us out here.
It's negative, but he pays us.
I lead the world in non-billable hours, actually.
Good for you. Well, it's going to be an exciting panel.
That's a courageous thing.
Yes, yes.
If you want to weigh in this morning, our email address is roundtable@wamc.org. I encourage you to keep them concise. Two paragraphs even is a stretch, so get your point across.
No, a couple of sentences, right?
Uncle Alan will read them, perhaps. We can't get to them all.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, no, we can't. We get 1,000 some days, and then we have to pick them out, and then there's always somebody say, how come you don't read mine? You
know, right. Like, I think, it's nothing personal, right? Sometimes it's personal.
Sometimes.
Yeah, but suffice to say, you curate the best of the bunch.
Well, it's hard. You know, they're coming in. You're reading them on the fly.
I know. It's impossible. I don't know how you do it.
I do it because I'm good.
Okay, let's start the show. Hillary Clinton will lay out ambitious new goals on the economy in a speech today in Raleigh, North Carolina. Clinton will follow up on an address in Columbus, Ohio, in which she said Donald Trump would lead the country into a recession. Clinton said in a preview of her North Carolina speech that she would work with both parties to develop good-paying jobs and infrastructure, advanced manufacturing, clean energy, and small business. Seeking to refocus his presidential campaign, Donald Trump will lambaste Hillary Clinton as a failed Secretary of State who is out of step with Americans on trade and immigration. Trump's address this morning at his hotel in New York's Soho neighborhood marks his official opening salvo against Clinton. And the billionaire businessman plans to focus in particular on Clinton's tenure at the State Department, arguing that her foreign policy is in part responsible for the creation of the Islamic State militant group.
And she also has this new thing, Ray, where she is blaming Secretary Clinton for channeling money to Bill Clinton's private university that he was making big bucks, beaucoup bucks on. You know, personally, it's been widely discounted already because the Bushes.
This came out earlier. Yeah, it was in a book, I think.
Yeah, the Bushes were doing it, the same university and all before, although she did increase the amount of money that was going. I think it's conflictive. I don't know what's wrong with the Clintons. I much admire them. I like them. But the fact of the matter is they don't know when to stop. There was that wonderful moment when Hillary said, you know, after giving the speeches, and they said, what'd you have to give those speeches to the bankers for? And she said, we needed the money. Well, I need the money more than she does.
Well, you're referring to the Politico piece that's entitled, Trump accuses Hillary Clinton of laundering State Department money to Bill. Quoting here from Lewis Nelson's piece, Donald Trump launched a new allegation at Hillary Clinton on Tuesday, accusing her of having laundered money through a for-profit university while she was Secretary of State. In a rapid response email blast Trump sent during Clinton's speech attacking Trump's economic proposals, the billionaire's campaign accused the former Secretary of State of funneling government money to Laureate Education. That's a for-profit chain of universities that employed Bill Clinton as honorary chancellor until April 2015.
Honorary chancellor who was paid. $16.5 million over that few years that he was there. That's pretty good honor, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and that up until 2 weeks ago, you only heard this on, you know, right-wing talk shows, you know, the right-wing radio talk shows, and now it's become a little more mainstream. Maybe the most interesting part of that story is the rapid response, right? The rapid response email, because Trump did not have a rapid response team other than him, you know, tweeting. And that, I think that really underlines the change in his administration of his campaign.
Yeah, although I think he might be making a mistake by comparing this to his own Trump University and the allegations against him and bringing that back up again, because that has not worked well for him when he talks about that. He says his was a straightforward, positive place that had great ideas and people got their money's worth. And he says that Laureate University or Laureate College, whatever it was called, they made money by racking up student debt on vulnerable students. Well, that's exactly the accusation that's being thrown against Trump University. And it doesn't help to bring that up because there's been lots of verification of that, lots of independent interviews, and that's gotten a lot of press. I think he's making a mistake even mentioning Trump University. It's a private business venture that he was involved in, and he's running for president, which is a very public position, and I think it'll hurt him.
Well, I think that's his point, though, right? And he may be making a mistake, but I think his point is, you know, I had to hear for months about Trump University, and meanwhile, a sitting Secretary of State is funneling or is doing things that get money to her husband to the tune of $16 million,
well,
and no one's talking about
it. No,
he
wasn't getting the $16 million for what she was sending. He was getting $60 million as basically salary.
Honorary chancellor.
Yeah.
Right. Honorary
chancellor.
But it came from funds that had their provenance with her being Secretary of State.
Well, the State Department had already had many contracts with Laureate before Hillary ever came along.
Right.
It dates back to the Bush administration. But they did continue while she was Secretary of State, and they did ratchet up.
Right.
And that, many people make a good point, she shouldn't have let that happen.
Well, to be clear, the Politico piece mentions the fact that Bloomberg investigated this and that
Bloomberg News.
Right. And there's no indication that the State Department money flowed directly to the for-profit education chain, according to Bloomberg. And again, quoting here from Lewis Nelson's piece on Politico.com. According to Bloomberg, the $55.2 million in State Department and U.S. aid grant money actually went to the International Youth Foundation, which was a nonprofit group headed by Laureate Education Chairman Douglas Becker. Now, getting to your point about this actually being underway under the Bush administration and then Obama, the interesting point here is the same Bloomberg investigation showed that the International Youth Foundation received $9 million in State Department grants in 2009. That's the year before Bill Clinton joined Laureate. The number jumped to $15.1 million in 2010. That was Bill Clinton's first year, and then ballooned to $25.5 million in grants in 2012.
Look, I'm going to vote for her, but I'm telling you now, I don't like this stuff. I've never liked it. I think that their instincts are imperfect, and they shouldn't do it because it doesn't look good, especially when you're going to run for the presidency of the United States.
Yeah, they didn't need for them both to be making speeches, right? I mean, Bill could have made the speeches and made $500,000 for 30 minutes, and what they would have done
or
$70 million instead of 140.
Yeah, that doesn't play well with the public who are struggling to pay the mortgage,
right,
when they find out the enormous amount of money that both Clintons were making from these speeches. And in this case, Donald Trump is calling it money laundering. He's saying that the money was given to this international organization, youth organization, which was coming from the State Department. That, in turn, was contracting with Laureate University, which at the time, or part of the time, was employing Bill Clinton at many millions of dollars a year to be their honorary chairman. That's a pretty good gig, don't you think, Ray?
I think that's a fine. It's even better than an associate editor of the Times.
It is much better. Let me tell you.
But not necessarily a corporate attorney. I think that's a pretty good gig.
Well, you know, he has too many pro bono hours. That's his problem.
It's the roundtable panel. Today's guests, Alan Shartok. He's a panelist. He's more than a guest. He's more like the father figure here. Associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain, and corporate attorney Rich Honan. Ray Graff in for Joe today. We'll take a brief break, and then we'll see if there are any letters, and if not, we'll move on.
Support for WMC comes from Siegel Music Colony, Scroon Lake, New York, presenting The Most Happy Fella by Frank Lesser, July 6th through July 9th. SiegelColony.org for tickets. Myron Wine and Spirits, Kingston. Since 1960, a wine and spirit shop with wines and spirits and staff for questions and advice. Myron Wine and Spirits on Facebook. Little Falls Cheese Festival on Little Falls Historic Main Street, the second annual showcasing of artisanal cheesemakers and gourmet food producers. Saturday, July 9th, littlefallscheesefestival.com. And Audubon Service, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, offering service, repair, and diagnosis of Asian-made and imports, specializing in late-model Volkswagen, Subaru, Audi, and BMW. AutobonTechnic.com.
¶¶
Welcome back, boys and girls, to the roundtable. 22 minutes after 9 o'clock, it's a Wednesday morning. Ray is in for Joe. Mike Spain, Rich Honan, and Alan Chartok on the panel. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org. And by golly, someone's actually writing in this morning, Alan. Although you'd never know it from looking at your tablet.
But the, no, you would now because I have Mike Spain.
Mike Spain figured it out?
Mike Spain, who is, you know, not as old as I am.
No,
but
few
old.
People are.
And he figured it out.
Yeah, I went to the mail app and clicked on it, and there came the mail.
You kids and the technology.
The
it's
thing.
Quite amazing.
Okay. Okay. So Trump might profit financially from his campaign. Hi, panel. As
Hi.
Per the NPR story this morning, please comment on the many implications of the Trump campaign paying rent at Trump Tower and other ways that Trump is pocketing campaign revenue. Mary in Wendell. P.S. It's important for us to hear the conservative views of your more right-wing panelists. Please encourage them to participate more often. So Rich, it's up to you. Bam, till ready.
Well, we spent the whole time off. Well, we were off air with you guys making fun of my hair, so I'm kind of hurt.
Let the record show
I'm
I was not
stung.
Making fun of your
no,
hair.
No, only Alan.
Only Alan was.
And I wasn't so much making fun of it as asking pertinent questions about it.
Right, but this is from a man who wears a hat all day.
Yeah, I'm just saying. So this is probably not a great radio topic anyway, right?
You can watch it on the thingy.
It's interesting that Trump gets kind of pilloried for he almost ran his campaign at a profit. You know, I mean, and somehow people are like, oh, you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to, you know, get $1 billion of other people's money
and rack up debt,
rack up debt and spend the hell out of it. And I unless somebody is suggesting to me that he got into this, you know, just to make money, and I don't think that's the case. I don't know why people have a problem with him running his campaign in a thrifty way.
Well, people have made that allegation, though. People have said that he got in it to promote his reality TV brand and his own Trump brand, and suddenly he started saying these outrageous things, and just as quickly he started winning the primaries. And now he's a year later. How'd I get here? You know, it would explain how he doesn't have much of a campaign organization to carry it from here.
Right.
That's plausible. I'm not saying that's the case, Rich, but I mean, that's a plausible explanation.
Yeah, I mean, that's as plausible as as the idea that Obama got into the original campaign to sell his book in 2008, which made him a millionaire.
Actually,
that I actually buy that one a little bit more.
I think he was also getting in 2008 so he could run in 2012,
right.
And then he suddenly started getting it too.
Well, right. Came first, the chicken or the egg, the book or the candidacy? We know that. That every single person who runs for political office. I even knew a guy out in Schenectady who was running for some position who thought he had to write a book. it's true. That's a true story, by the way. Wrote a book. So some people have other people writing the books, you know, for them. So it happens.
Profiles and courage? I don't know. Anyway.
Well, we know. I asked Ted Sorensen straight out, did you write that book or did he say? He said, I can't say. Well, I wrote the book.
Yes.
Right? I mean, I don't think there's any question about that. All right. But anyway, I do think that his inability to raise money is important in this. I agree with you, Rich, for the second time this morning. I don't like the fact that they have to raise that kind of money. I don't. I just think it's terrible. But the fact is, he's now desperately going to his friends and associates and asking them for money, and they're saying no. People are saying no to him.
How much does a presidential campaign on average cost from this point to November?
I wish I could tell you. They keep getting higher and higher.
At least $500 million. Right?
Okay.
Yeah.
From that, sure. So $500 million.
We have to acknowledge that the paradigm has shifted to some extent with regard to Trump, in that he didn't spend very much money and cleaned house in the primaries. So are we 100% certain that the hugely ballyhooed disparity between how much Clinton has in the campaign account and how much Trump has at this point really matters that much? It is obviously a different picture.
Well, a couple of things.
First of all, a lot of negative campaign ads that money buys.
Yeah, well, you're right.
I mean, just constant.
Well, first of all, yesterday we heard that he was going to borrow his own money for his campaign.
Which so everyone does.
Everyone lends money to their campaign. Second of all, we don't know how much money he has. Not really. Never released his income tax. He said he had $10 billion in the beginning, But I, for one, don't believe him.
Do you believe he can pony up a couple hundred million if he really needs it?
Yes.
Okay.
I think so. But in any case, he doesn't seem to want to.
Why would you?
Well, it's been effective. Corey Lewandowski, who was canned this week as Trump's campaign manager, ran a very successful strategy where Trump would say outrageous things. He'd get a lot of media coverage. When he would go on talk shows, the ratings would go up. He was permitted to call into talk shows, hitting several of the morning news shows on the same morning and getting enormous media coverage. And it worked. It didn't cost a lot of money. He got a lot of publicity. He came to Albany and he filled up the Times Union Center, with 15,000 people. And he was doing that all over the country and continues to. It's very effective. It's a lot better than having to raise $500 million and go with attack ads on TV. But I think he's going to need to do that, too.
Yeah, he needs to play defense, if nothing else. And just, like I say, a constant string of attack ads in every swing state starting now.
Yes, with all that
very difficult.
That's right, Rich. But with all of that said, I believe, unless I was hallucinating or dreaming it, that I saw some polls yesterday that indicated in those very swing states, he's doing fine. He's not winning, but he's not losing
Pennsylvania
either.
And Ohio.
Yeah.
Well,
but the onslaught of ads has not really started yet.
Is anybody tired of talking about this?
I am.
I've had it. And we have, 200 days to go?
Oh, no.
Can America stand the tedium of this race?
Well, they better, because there are those people who believe that if we elect Donald Trump as president, we are in for an era of fascism.
And there's people
who
believe
that. Does Alan Shartok believe that?
Not really. But I do believe that there is a possibility that a guy who gets drunk on his own words, El Duce and others proved that before, can sort of, start to justify anything in his own mind.
All right, Rich, final word here, and then we have to take a break.
If there's anyone who's drunk on his own words, it's certainly...
It's certainly
Obama, who, who's the king of, who are you going to believe, me or your own eyes?
Okay, well,
stop.
Okay. All right, you got the last word,
Alan. You better get back to the barber.
The password is stop, and we will stop. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We'll get back to your letters and then shift gears a little bit. We'll be back after news. It's the roundtable on WAMC. Forgot what show it was for a minute because we've been talking about haircuts for the last 3 minutes. It's 9:34 as we reconvene this meeting of the Hair Club for Men. Alan Shartok, Mike Spain, Rich Honan, and Ray Graff here in Studio A. What are you looking at?
Well, I wanted to know from Honan, if I could, how much that haircut clip set
you
back?
$10.
Wow. Mine's 20.
$2 a hair. Good for you.
That is funny.
So, the email address is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Say, Alan, do we have any letters?
We do. Okay. John says, I was blame Obama. I was wondering how long it would take Rich to attack Obama or blame Obama for something. Oh, and Rich, how exactly should a black man in office behave? Come on, that's not right. I don't like that letter. I mean, I don't think it's fair.
That's the panacea, right? I mean, so now I can't criticize. And let me ask you, when Hillary wins, or if Hillary wins, I can't criticize her. Why? Because she's a woman.
No, but I'm a great.
And then when the next person,
I love Obama, but that's a cheap shot.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on.
Okay. All right. Here we go. Hello.
Hello.
Trump's campaign funds. How is a politician's legal use of campaign funds for the purpose of clothing or personal travel really any different from Donald Trump paying himself for the use of his own properties? Considering his claim that he is self-funded, his use of donated funds to pay himself is out and out theft. Only a scam artist. Once a scam artist, always a scam artist. That's from Ken in Saratoga.
Yeah, but that's one, legal, and two, a very common practice. Yeah.
It is. And there are rules, and either you obey the rules or you don't obey the rules.
Plus, I don't know that he really denies that he's a scam artist. I think he's trying to use that as his...
He would characterize it differently. He's a good deal man.
The art of the deal.
He's an astute businessman,
Anthony says, Trump's early strategies, ... good morning, panel.
Good morning.
The big problem with Trump's ridiculous remarks during his run for the Republican bid was that they were so outrageously racist and anti-woman, leaving him wide open for negative ads by Hillary Clinton, which we are already seeing. Anthony.
He's right.
Well,
there's a lot of videotape of him criticizing women.
That's all true. The real question is who were they aimed at, and what proportion of the voting population are they, and are they willing to come out? This is not Alan endorsing the tactic. I'm just saying, if you try to get inside his mind, he said, well, it worked in the Republican primaries, and I think it'll work here. I have nothing to apologize for because we've gotten too PC, and the people who I want to vote for me will come out as a result of this.
Yeah, but I think it's a mistake to assume that if, for example, you offend women, that it's only women's vote that you're going to lose.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, if you offend some segment, aren't we allowed to be offended by him offending some other segment of the population?
Surely.
I'm allowed to take that into account. If I decide I don't want to vote for him based on that, I'm allowed to do that, even if I'm not part of the directly offended population.
I think he's after a different group than you. I think he's after people who are sick and tired, in his mind, of the way things are going and want to react to that.
Well, that's my group. That's my group.
So that's you. Well, I don't think it is you. I mean, you're sort of, I know this is going to sound very elitist. I'm not going to say it.
Good. Don't say it. Good. Let's move on.
Okay.
Next letter.
Oh, next letter. Michael says, Rich, I can't stand hearing Rich whack Obama as an answer to any criticism of his and his compatriots' positions. He never addresses the Republican position, but rather attacks Obama as a king of that position. A very typical response from a Republican. That's all they have. I want to just bring everybody up to date. Rich is denied, right? Rich, that you are a Republican.
I am an independent.
Okay, number one. Number two, you have, in fact, addressed the Republican positions on several occasions.
Including this morning.
Yeah. So.
I just like to point out that historically, some of the things that are being criticized now are things that have been done by Obama or other candidates in the past.
I don't want anybody to take the from my defense of you, the idea that I agree with you.
I don't think anyone does. I don't think that's going to be an issue.
That's right. Trump, no worries.
Trump loan. Does anyone know what interest rate Trump is charging for the loan from himself to his campaign? I think, by the way, that there are very specific rules from the Federal Elections Commission and others that govern all of this, and I'm sure that they're not going to get themselves into that kind of trouble. Daniel says...
See, by the way, this is the problem. You mentioned Trump, and it just takes up the whole the whole conversation.
Exactly.
Sure.
You know?
It's great that people are writing letters, but you know, there's other real issues.
You mentioned you, Rich, and that happens. Here's another one from Daniel.
Oh, boy.
I believe Obama long before I believe a single word Rich said. That's a mistake, Daniel. But okay, you can say it.
That's fair.
A letter. Do we have...
So did he get to keep his health insurance and he got to keep his doctor?
He probably did.
Okay.
No subject.
Somebody mentioned something about if you like your plan, you can keep your plan. If you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. If this guy did, then great.
That was a misstatement. It's no longer operative.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right.
No subject.
But believe him.
Do we only have a choice between gridlock and semi-authoritarianism?
Okay.
Well,
that's actually
a good rhetorical question.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Is there any middle ground? Well, we're kind of in the middle ground.
Well, gridlock is the middle ground, kind of, yeah.
For Rich from Grace, Obama approval rating plus 5.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And let's see here. Ray read my mind. So sick of hearing about Trump and Clinton. What about Bernie?
Okay.
Bernie Sanders, the senator from Vermont, who is the runner-up for the Democratic presidential nomination.
Well, he is not among those being vetted for the Clinton vice president.
I noticed that name missing.
Chuck Schumer floated him as a possible head of the DNC, the Democratic National Committee.
Well, that was interesting.
Yeah, I find that interesting.
That means Chuck Schumer is going to be the next head of the Democratic National Committee.
No, he's going to be
I'm telling you right now.
Of his party in the Senate.
Write that one down.
Okay.
And now remember when I said Ted Sorensen, you probably wrote the book. Alan, Ted Sorensen did the lion's share of research for JFK's book. The Kennedys gave him all royalty, but JFK did the final editing. Check. Okay. Oh, this is a good page.
Yeah, this is good. Yeah, I'll go along with that.
I don't know that disagrees with what you said, Alan.
No. Okay. Check. Election. Oh, I had a question as a political scientist that I don't know the answer to. If Hillary wanted to pick Joe Biden as her vice president under the 25th Amendment? Could she?
That's a great question.
Boy, that is a really intriguing question.
One of our listeners will know.
Is he term limited?
Yeah, as a vice president.
As a vice president.
I don't believe he is.
I don't think he is.
It just affects the president.
It would be the right thing for her to do.
Boy, I'll tell you
if he would take it.
That's not a bad idea.
That's a very clever populist move that she could make, and it's...
I want to suggest it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let it be said that Shartok came up with the idea.
Well, I think it's been floated.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, has it?
It's his idea.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard people suggest it, but the idea is that the amendment of LBJ became president when Kennedy was assassinated in 1963. He could have served another term. He was elected in 64 to a full term, and he could have served under the Constitution another term in 68. He elected not to run, but so you can be vice president. He would have been vice president for 4 years and president for 8 years.
Well, Harry Truman, too.
Yeah.
Remember, Harry Truman took over, but he could have had another full two terms. He couldn't have won. Right. Couldn't have beaten Eisenhower, the man who saved the world.
Well, they said he couldn't beat Dewey, Allen, and you know what?
There's a big difference between Dewey. Dewey's a major figure in New York because of the Dewey Thruey.
All right. Can we get to Brexit or not?
Right. Let's do Brexit.
Let's do Brexit.
Prime Minister David Cameron is taking on a frenetic day of campaigning on the eve of the vote on whether or not Britain will leave the European Union. Cameron defended Britain's participation in the 28-nation bloc in a BBC interview today, arguing that the country benefits from membership, and he rejected the notion that the institution is moribund. Cameron says, "We are not shackled to a corpse," which I've got to steal that line. Meanwhile, the most notable figure in the Leave campaign, former London Mayor Boris Johnson, has kicked off a whirlwind tour of England as he pushes for a British exit. Johnson urged voters to believe in our country. He says this is a crucial time. Big day. Big day coming up.
Tomorrow, right?
Yeah, the vote is tomorrow.
Which will be today. Later today, right? Yeah.
Do you think the assassination of the member of parliament might be the thing that kind of put people more onto the staying side?
No.
It could. We don't know that it will be the thing, but it certainly will help.
That was awful.
Well, the bookies are predicting that they will remain.
Yeah.
And you know what? And if it turns out that they leave, I think that will be another indication that polls seem to be swinging left.
Interesting.
And because we've had a bunch of things both in the States and there where you thought you thought things were swinging left by the polls.
And they were right down the middle.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
It may mean that there needs to be an adjustment to polls now because they've been just off a little bit.
Yeah. So we'll see.
Does anybody else see a parallel to what is happening in England and what is happening here with the widespread voter disgust, which has led to the rise of Trump and Bernie?
I agree with you. I think that it reflects the UK is unhappy with the way things are. Many of them would rather they'd like to return to the days when things were better. It's very nostalgic when they were, you know, the UK was worldwide power. Yes, ruled the waves, etc. They don't like immigration because it causes strife in their communities and makes it more competitive for jobs, and unemployment is a problem.
Mm-hmm. But of course, there's a widespread belief that the minute that this Brexit happens, Scotland is out of there. So now you're left with, this tiny little island, by itself. And the Queen will not be able to rule over her vast domain and other things.
I think the bonds that hold together Great Britain are a lot stronger than the bonds that hold together the EC.
I don't think. But, well, I know, Richard.
Absolutely. But there's a value to. I mean, what worries me about an exit from the EU, from the EC, EU rather, by the UK. Any other number letters in there?
Okay.
If Britain leaves the European Union, it just creates that sort of tension that does lead to more, animosity across Europe, and it's just not a good thing. It's a good thing to work out those differences
Stopped any animosity?
It hasn't done anything.
I think it has helped, Ray. I don't think it has cured the, you know,
we haven't seen a 100-year war or anything.
But
it's been
people
fine.
Can travel freely through Europe. People trade can happen freely through Europe, and that does. You can still have your ethnic heritage and still belong to something bigger. It happens in the U.S. Right?
I think a lot of English businesses would argue you can't trade as freely because of the regulations imposed by the EU. You know, from the EU on high.
Right, and I think there's resentment there.
And that's what, how would you vote?
I'd vote to leave.
And you
Mike,
would?
Yeah, sure. And Mike, I think
you'd be
Mike,
wrong.
What? Yes, I would. I often am, but I am never in doubt. The
I like it.
The EU is not without its flaws.
Right. And I think Mike, but you hit it on the head. I think what a lot of people are against is this whole idea that we are. It's not that good, but it's not worth changing. And, you know, we see that a lot. You know, it would be too cataclysmic to change. And I think, you know, whether it's the Trump thing or the Brexit thing, a lot of people are saying, well, you know what? How cataclysmic would it really be? Because are we going to just keep accepting?
Yeah, I agree.
I think that might be part of what's driving it.
I don't
saying
think people
right
are thinking way out in advance. They're just saying, I don't like the way it is now. Let's change it.
Right. And I think the worst thing that can happen for those who want to stay is for all of the European powers to say this would be a terrible thing for Britain. In other words, I think there is a resentment underlying that very similar to the resentment in the Trump and Bernie camps of the status quo. And so when people who are on the fence about leaving here, Germany and all the other countries say, this is awful, you will suffer the consequences, they say, you know what? We don't want to hear you. You're not the boss of us, essentially.
Right, right.
And that does backfire. I agree.
Yeah. And we keep listening to the experts, and you guys keep telling us it's going to get better, and it's gotten worse.
Well, we've got a firecracker of a story in the Times Union today. We'll take a short break. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop, Saratoga Springs, New York, providing nature gifts, bird seed, bird feeders, and more to help create a backyard refuge. wbu.com/Saratoga Springs. George Propane, Goshen, Massachusetts. Family owned and operated for over 75 years, serving Western Massachusetts with propane and full-service heating and plumbing installation, services, and deliveries. GeorgePropane.com. Time and Space Limited, Hudson. Screening My Love, Don't Cross the River, The Lobster, Eva Hess, Concerto, A Beethoven Journey, and Wagner and Bruckner by the Berlin Philharmonic. TimeandSpace.org. And Charles Padula, DDS, Union Avenue, Schenectady, providing bonded composites and air abrasion cavity removal, which helps to eliminate needles and drills. PadulaDDS.com.
Roundtable on WAMC. And Wednesday morning, it is 9:50, and the email address here is roundtable@wamc.org. We're joined today by tech attorney Rich Honan, WAMC's Alan Chartok, and associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain. And Mike, a great Casey Seiler piece in the paper, Cuomo gives Investigator Moreland Act powers. Lay it out for us.
Right. Casey Seiler, our state editor, is reporting today that Barry Schwartz, who is the private investigator brought in April by the governor to do an internal investigation of the allegations that the Buffalo Billions Project, which is the project where New York State is trying to rescue the economy of Western New York, that there's been favoritism and inside preferences given as contracts are handed out to people who are friendly to the administration, et cetera, et cetera. That, of course, was an investigation started by Preet Bharara, the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, and that was disclosed back in April. At the same time, Cuomo hired a private investigator to look at it internally and make recommendations, and he is also trying to get to the bottom of it, he says. Well, it turns out Bart Schwartz, who's an investigator, Schwartz, somebody else.
a lot of Barry Schwartzes.
Right.
And there are a lot of Harriet Schwartzes.
Well, Bart Schwartz, he was empowered under Section 6 of state executive law, otherwise known as the Moreland Act. He was given special civil subpoena powers, and he has a wide set of authority to investigate the Buffalo Billion issues. Now, that's interesting because, as you know, the Moreland Act has been used before by Governor
Cuomo. It's worked out really well before, yeah.
And we're all thinking, especially from back in 2013 when the governor commissioned a Moreland Act panel to investigate public corruption. And then promised right after that in 2013 that he would let them investigate anything, including his own office, and there would be no holds on them, and they would be able to, this panel would be able to investigate it. Yet, before it finished its job, Cuomo shut it down, saying that it had achieved what he wanted him to achieve, and that is identify some flaws that the legislature and the governor could go ahead and fix. Anyway, he's been getting a lot of criticism from that. Now it turns out he's using the Moreland Act again for his own investigator, which is kind of a parallel investigation to what Preet Bharara is doing. And the other aspect of this story that Casey points out is that it still has not been disclosed how much they're paying Bart Schwartz and his office and his investigators and his staff, and what the terms of that is and how long that agreement is. The governor's office says they're working up a contract with Schwartz, even though he began his work back in April.
So he's working without a contract at this time?
Well, it's a negotiated contract. It's being negotiated as he's doing his job. The governor's office says they'll send it to the state comptroller, Tom DiNapoli, for review. And when they do that, they'll make it public. So he's working under the governor to investigate any aspect of the Buffalo Billion, including possibly subpoenaing the governor. He has the authority to do
that.
Yeah,
right.
And the governor, when he dissolved the Moreland Act Commission on Public Corruption, jokingly said that you couldn't have a Moreland Commission investigate the governor who named the Moreland Commission. That would not pass the laugh test.
See, when he first set up the Moreland Act Commission, you will all remember that he said, yeah, let them come after me. I don't care. Let them come do anything they want. Then when he went,
what are you, Rich Little now?
Then when they got close and the real estate guys were being looked at and everything else, then he said at that very moment, what Mike just said, you know, it's my commission. I can do anything I want and they can't come after me. Then when he just got questioned about this, he said, well, you know, he could do anything he wants. Does this have a familiar ring to it? Listen, folks, I understand that the big chutzpah of the year award is dinner is going to be soon, and I nominate Andrew Cuomo because I think this is more chutzpah than I have ever seen.
Well, the question that's raised here is if Bart Schwartz and his investigators are coming in close to the governor's office in this current Moreland Act commissioned investigation. Will the governor, you know, respond to the subpoenas? Will the governor give depositions? It would be interesting to see if it gets too close.
So this is parallel to Bharara's investigation.
Well it is.
I haven't heard much about that.
Well, that's ridiculous.
Right.
It's not really parallel. It's because it has no official sanction.
It has no connection to the Bharara.
Look, the reason things
just going on simultaneously,
and arguably it would interfere with Bharara's investigation, right?
So
you don't want two different people questioning the same witnesses.
Well, in this case, that will happen.
Right.
That a lot of the same turf will be covered.
Now, as an attorney, why would you not want that to happen, Rich?
Well, if I'm the person running the investigation, and let me just say, by the way, this is a move that is often done in the corporate world. If you think there's an internal problem in the corporation, you go and you hire the former. It's always a former U.S. attorney, and you pay him a ton of money,
or her,
and you go to great lengths to make sure, as we sit on our ethnically diverse, you know, four white guys sitting around in this panel, right?
You would say that, except senior citizens. Two good haircuts and one bad one.
Anyway, and you pay him or her a ton of money, but you give them carte blanche, and you say whatever you find is what you find, and we, the corporation, will live with it. That does not appear to be the case here. To answer your question, if I'm running my investigation, I want to be the first person talking to the witnesses. I want to be the first person following up with the witnesses.
You mean if you're Preet or if you're...
If I'm Preet.
Yeah, Preet. Yeah.
Right. And it certainly does seem to be like second-guessing Bharara's so own investigation.
Are you afraid of subliminal or otherwise coaching of witnesses for an official investigation?
What I'm afraid of is that someone inadvertently tips off a witness on a piece of information that I wanted to hold back until I had that witness committed to a position. And I'd say, you know, I don't want somebody talking to Ray Graff that and says, Alan Chartok told us that.
Yeah. Well, you definitely don't want to ask that question. Right. Yeah. Oh, boy.
But in your opinion, having his own investigation that he commissions going on while Preet Bharara investigates the Buffalo Billions caper, that could actually interfere with the U.S. attorney's own investigation.
In my opinion, yeah, it could. I'm sure.
And he got warned by the U.S. attorney.
Right.
About that.
Bharara was not. I think when you interviewed him, I think Bharara was not necessarily pleased with that. I don't know if you mentioned it then, but
No. But recently he has said,
"Yeah, so don't mess with my investigation."
Yeah.
And the other thing, so Mike, yes, that would bother me. The other thing is, the state supposedly doesn't have an independent, you know, doesn't have like inspector generals and people who independently are supposed to be investigating things when there's a problem with the state.
Cuomo. We all know what goes on. Cuomo has put his people in charge of all of those various commissions, the Jay Joke, Cope, right, and other things. So we know that. What? You're looking askance, Mike.
No. That was a Freudian slip, Jay Joke instead of Jay Cope.
It was determinedly.
Well, why would not this be the purview of the attorney general?
If there was mishandling or funneling of contracts in the Buffalo Billion project, why the attorney general wouldn't look in? He does have the authority to investigate elsewhere in the state.
That
he
was
can
a
investigate
great,
the executive branch.
That was a great question from Ray, because there has been different handling by the governor of the attorney general. First, he wanted to take a lot of the responsibilities he left behind in the attorney general's office for himself, and he got slapped down, for that one. Then he got him to go along, the attorney general, with his ill-fated Moreland Act commission, and made a sap, in my opinion, of the attorney general at that moment. I have respect for the attorney general.
All right, listen, we're out of time, gentlemen.
But I have more to say.
Well, we'll have to bring that up perhaps tomorrow. Mike Spain, thank you for being here. You can read that whole article at timesunion.com.
Great article. Great job.
Rich Honan, thank you for being here. My leftist friend at Alan Chartok, once again, great job. And the email address is roundtable@wamc.org. We'll get to more of your letters tomorrow morning.